This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Seattle reigns above them all in the NFL. The Seahawks, Super Bowl champions for the second time.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, the Seahawks won last night, and the highlight courtesy of NBC Network, and we appreciate you being on the Gas House Gang today with us. It is Kevin Wheeler and Chris Ranji. Tom Ackerman is out for today. 314-436-7900. We have a text line, 314-436-7900. You could send a text message there.
Can I text it?
Well, you can, but
like a suggestion for a topic?
It would be very unhelpful if you did. Because, you know, buddy, I'm right here. You just tell me. All right. You can, if you want to, watch us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And you can leave us comments on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Also, the Odyssey app is free, where you can listen to the show and the podcast and leave us voice messages there. So, as I have been saying, Kevin, I just was not prepared to do a whole New England Patriots Super Bowl championship thing. No. And thank God they were not favored last night. And they looked like a team that was not favored. Boy, yeah. I don't know, man. Drake May, I know he's a young quarterback, but he's in the MVP conversation.
He finished second. He almost beat Matthew Stafford.
I know. And he looked like somebody who didn't belong out there for about three quarters or so.
Yeah, I think there are a couple things at play here when it comes to Drake May and his performance yesterday. Part of it is his fault, part of it's not. His offensive line got destroyed. The whole left side, I mean, it was a storyline from the word go. The left tackle, left guard were just turnstiles. I mean, they were getting shoved back into May constantly. So some of it's not his fault. That part is not his fault. That eliminated a lot of their ability to run the football. That eliminated a lot of the different types of plays, maybe some longer developing plays. But then also when he had open plays, he missed them. And, you know, it's interesting to me in a lot of ways, because he was really bad in the last month of the regular season, starting with the Buffalo game, and Buffalo went to cover six on him, and he didn't handle it well. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to be that was the hack that started to get to people. And look, you know, when you look at the playoff games, it's not like he lit those up either. I mean, they only scored 16 points against the Chargers. It's not exactly a blowout. They did a good job against the Texans, and he played pretty well there. But the Denver game was simply, Denver didn't have Bo Nix and Jarrett Stidham was completely helpless. I think if Bo Nix plays that game, Denver beats New England based on what we saw. Now, and May wasn't even that good in that game. He did make a couple of big plays, but overall, but nobody could be good. The weather was just a massive problem in that game. Right. But you know what you saw yesterday was a guy that is very good, but also put up numbers against what is measurably the easiest schedule in football this year. The Patriots had, count even with three playoff games.
Yeah.
Even with three playoff games, they had the weakest schedule in the NFL. That's crazy. And you saw it a little bit last night. Their defense was really good. Their defense gave them a chance to stay in that game, but that offense was absolutely helpless.
And again, I don't know how good May is actually going to be. I think he'll be a pretty good quarterback.
He's all right.
I don't think he's going to be.
He's a second year guy going up against one of the best defenses we've seen in the last 10 years.
Right. But I don't know long term that we're talking about him really in an MVP conversation usually.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
I mean, it might be every
we'll see
now
next
and
year,
then.
Right? Next year, they're going to play a tougher schedule. They're going to play a Super Bowl team schedule.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a little bit tougher road. And, you know, look, they'll get some other pieces going, and he'll get better as he gains experience, too. I mean, look, Sam Darnold was a bust with the Jets. I think we're seeing it's a lot more about the team that drafted him than it was about him.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can see that there's a road to being something better than what people think you are when you're younger. Just got to have time, and you got to be in the right place. And I think May is in the right place. I think they do a good job there.
Right, and I know I just basically, and I'm not calling Drake May as anything but a bust. He's not even close to that.
No.
But I
agree with you on the MVP thing.
Long term, that's just my assessment of him, and I could be totally wrong. In 4 or 5 years from now, you can come back and say, well, here's Drake May. He's top three in the MVP race every year. What do you got to say about that, Ronj? And I'll say, okay, I was wrong. But my guess is he's not going to sniff that most of the time, if ever again. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. But I would say this. It is really dangerous to play that game of 1 year into a football career that a quarterback is a bust. Stop. We got to stop doing that.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And we do it. Honestly, sometimes we should do it 5 or 6 games
in. I was going to say, we should probably stop doing it for 3 or 4 years in.
I agree with you.
I mean, Baker Mayfield looked like a bust in Cleveland.
That's right.
And he gets out of there and gets to a functional place and he can actually play.
That's right.
You know, I mean, we're seeing that with Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold was in a dysfunctional place and it took a long time, but he had a great year with Minnesota last year, even though he was terrible in the playoff game. He was terrible in their final stretch. He led them to 13, 14 wins and had a productive year. It's just a matter of being in the right place and having a quality team around you and a good coaching staff.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between looking at a guy, his ability, and trying to... It's clearly difficult for even the professionals to project how good a quarterback's going to be 5, 6 years from now.
Yes.
So we're amateurs trying to do it. So
speak for yourself.
Well, that's right, Kevin. Yeah. You're a real pro. But I think I think it's just a game that we probably should stop playing. It's one thing that you can look at a guy and say, I don't know if he's going to project out long term and be this.
Yeah.
That's one thing to say, nope, he's a bust after looking at season stats and saying, oh, his completion percentage is only 59% right now.
Yeah.
So he's not very, I know he's a bust. Like, dude, you don't know that.
No.
You don't know that. It's half a year in or a year in. You've got to give these guys some time. Because we all know for the quarterback, where you get drafted is a huge deal. And I've been playing this what if exercise, oh man, I don't know, a million times. Had Patrick Mahomes been drafted by somebody else?
The Bears?
The Bears, for example. Had they just waited at number 3 and taken him there instead of trading up one spot to get Mitch Trubisky? I don't know that Mahomes, with that regime... With those people in charge at that time, I don't think Mahomes is this.
It's a combination, right? He would have been probably better than Mitch, but...
Yeah, but I don't think he's this
but
guy.
But no, it, how you're developed really does matter, and Andy Reid was a guy that knows how to develop quarterbacks, and they actually had the ability to put together a good team around him, and that matters.
Right.
I mean, like, having support really matters.
Yeah. So, I don't know, I liked the Super Bowl itself. The game was not particularly good last night, for the first 3 quarters.
It was close for a while, but it was like it didn't feel like it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It felt like...
No, it felt like Seattle was going
to
pull
away.
Once
it got to 9-0, it felt like it was over. And then when it got to 19, I was like, wow, this one's done.
Yeah. No touchdowns in the first 3 quarters of it. But yeah. And now we look ahead to next season, and you know, you and I are fans of... teams in the same division.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to make of the Lions moving forward. I think the Bears are on a upward trajectory.
So. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you never really know because you'll have a Super Bowl team or a team that gets to the Super Bowl or close to it, and they don't win it, and they're like, you know what, we'll be back again, and they never go back.
You never know, man.
Right, so you never know if a team is set up for the next 5 to 10 years or if that was it.
The rarity is the one that stays there.
I agree.
For 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
The more common thing is you're there for a year or two and you pull back and maybe you get back again. You know, you kind of do this little yo-yo thing.
Mm-hmm.
Free agency, injuries, you know, obviously football is pretty random when it comes to sample size too, right? I mean, the difference between a playoff team and not a playoff team is 1 or 2 games, you know, but that's like still, almost 10% of your season.
That's right.
You know, so it's a big, it doesn't take much to dramatically change your outcome.
Super Bowl. Football season, it's over, and we have several months to wait.
Baseball season, baby!
It is baseball season, and in fact, it is officially the week that baseball begins.
Mm-hmm.
Spring training for pitchers and catchers. Cardinals will have their first official workout in Florida this Thursday. We've got Kevin Wheeler here to talk about it and the upcoming Cardinals season. We will do that when we come back. Also, Bob Ramsey will talk Billikens basketball with us. The Billikens keep winning. They are 23-1. Going to look up the Associated Press poll here and see where they sit. In just a moment, we'll tell you where that is. And we'll talk Cardinals baseball when we come back on KMOX. It is the Gas House Gang, and it is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. We will talk Billikens basketball in just a bit with Bob Ramsey, who was on the call here on 104.1 FM as the Billikens won their 23rd game. They're 23-1, and they have gone up one spot in the Associated Press poll. They are now at 18. They moved up a spot. St. John's jumped them. They went up, not like in a fight, but St. John's went past them, moving up five spots after. That's what happens when you beat UConn.
You get jumped.
So St. John's right in front of them at 17. St. Louis is at 18. They are 15 in the net rankings, which is a good number to look out for just in case.
Yeah.
You know, if the Billikens don't win the A-10 tournament, that's a number that you look at when the committee gets together and decides who's at large. But, Kevin, that's not why you called. The baseball season is all pretty much officially
here.
I mean, it's here,
so
right?
So the people that are going to the World Baseball Classic are reporting today.
True.
Yeah, in all around the sport. So it's not a mandatory. I guess it's early optional, but I'm sure they're all going to be doing it. So, yeah, it's a good time.
Cardinals will have their official first workout as pitchers and catchers. The pitchers and catchers will be there working out in West Palm on Thursday.
Yeah, I say Wednesday's report day, I believe. Thursday is the workout, yeah.
So here we go, man.
Matt Pauly's baseball on his season. Way down there right now.
That's right. That's why Matt Pauly has not been on the shows this morning. He's going to spring training. It's starting up here. And it's one of those things that every single year kind of hits you before you know it.
It's about to get real.
Yeah. Real what, though, Kevin? That's the question. What's it going to be real for the Cardinals?
You know, I'll say this. The term that or the word that pops to my head when I say that is it's going to be real interesting. Mm-hmm. Because you have some unknowns. You've got, to me, you got two tracks of players on the team, right? You have players that are essentially, for lack of better term, trying out to show you that they're worthy of being a part of the future. And then you have other players that are just getting their opportunities. So we're finding out what they are, like J.J. Weatherholt. What is he? All of the reports are stellar. He has succeeded at every level he's ever played at. He was a stud in college. He was a stud in the Cape Cod League with wood bats. He's been nothing but a stud as a professional athlete so far. So he's never had any failures, and it's something he's going to have to overcome at some point. He's going to fail at some point, and you got to find a way to get through that. But he really hasn't run through many struggles so far. I would be shocked if he's not on the opening day in the opening day lineup.
So that's what I wanted to. That's where I wanted to go with this because I think most of us are kind of assuming, hey, it's a foregone conclusion. He's on the team. That's not what the team is saying, though.
Well,
I mean, I don't think they can say right now before spring training even starts, and he's a non-roster invitee.
Right.
I don't think they can say, yeah, he's going to be on the club, obviously. You have to let him play out this process and go into it as if he has to earn a job here over the next 6 weeks. But what really has to happen in order for J.J. Weatherholt to not be on the roster when the season starts, especially after the Brendan Donovan deal gets made?
Yeah, I'd say he'd have to really suck. Like if he's just decent or better, he'll be on the team.
No, it's not about numbers. It's about how he looks.
I think it is. Is he catching up to velocity? Does he have the same ability to control an at-bat against major league pitching that he does against minor league pitching? And the problem is, one thing, you know, this actually really ties nicely, Ronj, into what you were talking about with the quarterbacks last segment. Is you have to be really careful to not get too excited or too upset too early. Because the first half of the Grapefruit League schedule, he's facing mostly minor leaguers. And I'm sure they're going to try to find spots for him to face major leaguers. Because that's the test that he needs to pass. But remember, we saw Jordan Walker light up spring training for like the first 3 weeks. Well, then when they started to whittle down the rosters and it was more major leaguers, he struggled and that didn't impact their decision. They still brought him north, and it was clear that he was probably still not quite ready. And the last couple of years have demonstrated even more of that. So we have to be careful in looking at Weatherholt and say, okay, if he has the first 2 or 3 weeks and he's amazing, and then he struggles late, that may be a sign that you're not quite ready. But he's also a guy that had a significant amount of action at AAA last year and had no issues whatsoever. Like, there really isn't going to be much for him to prove, and he could play defensively at second, third, or short, and you're going to be okay there. So, you know, I mean, when Chaim Bloom was on with you guys last week, you know, after the Donovan trade, I thought it was really interesting. He's kind of set it up the same way. He's like, I want him to have to earn it. We're not going to give him anything, but obviously the job is there for him to take it. He would have to not win it to not be there.
Yeah.
Because if he's not there, who are we committing to? I mean, you're going to have Mason Wynn at shortstop. You're going to have Nolan Gorman probably playing third base. You got Sejacy, I guess it would be the guy that would benefit if Weatherholt's not there.
I would think so. Looking at the roster, I can't help but, and I'm looking at what the projected lineup is probably going to be about. All right. So Nootbaar, Herrera, Burleson.
If Noot's even ready.
If he's ready. Yeah. So let's say he is. Nootbaar, Herrera, Burleson, Gorman, maybe. Mason Wynn, JJ. You've got Walker in the mix. Paez is in there. And Victor Scott. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of what you're looking at. I cannot help but look at this roster. And as much as we have talked about Walker and how important we thought he was going to be to the whole operation, and he just hasn't yet, the dude was born about 3.5 months before Weatherholt. we have to keep that in mind.
He's
when the
really
season,
young, yeah.
He's still very, very young. And in the same way we talked about quarterbacks from the last segment, we see the same thing happen with baseball players.
Happens with hitters a lot, yeah.
I am not saying that Jordan Walker is going to figure it out. What I am saying is the dude is still really, really young, and even though he's had a decent amount of at-bats so far, I mean, we're talking about somebody that could still figure this out.
Yeah,
100%. And you know, in a year or two, you know, if the Cardinals have kind of given up on him, which I don't know if they will or not, they've got him under control for a while, so I don't see them doing that. He's not 24 yet. He won't turn 24 until the season starts.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy has a little experience, but it's not that much, really. And he's got a lot of time ahead of him.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there are a couple things that conspire to make his evaluation really tough, because the last 2 years he's been horrible. I mean, there's just at the major league, he's been an awful hitter there, and he's not been good defensively, which is at this point no longer excusable.
There was a little improvement
for like 2 months last year. Yeah, but my worry about him is that he takes his offensive struggles into the field.
Right.
So when he's not hitting, his mind is just messed up and he takes it out into the field, because he got off to a better start defensively last year, but then he regressed as the season went along. Well, you know, there's no more excuse for being a bad outfielder. There was at first, because the team screwed up. He didn't play enough outfield in the minor leagues. He should have never played third base. He should have gone right to the outfield the day he was drafted. But they wasted a little time there, and understand he was a bit uncomfortable out there at first. But you've been 3 years straight an outfielder. You should at least be okay when you have an elite arm, which he does. When you are, he's like an 80th percentile runner. He's one of the fastest big guys you're ever going to see in Major League Baseball. He's like 80th percentile in sprint speed, and he's 6'5", 270.
He's huge, right.
And he's a huge guy. And he's got tools that you don't give up on. His bat speed is Aaron Judge. His hard hit rate is as good as those guys, too.
Right.
The problem is he just doesn't hit the ball enough. When you don't have enough contact, you can't have enough hard contact. And when he hits it a lot, he hits it on the ground. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the things that you can't teach are the 6'5", 6'6", 270 with bat speed like Aaron Judge. You can't teach that.
Right.
So you try to work with it and you give it as much time as you can.
And I hope that they can figure out something with him, because I know I do this a lot where I try to project 3-4 years from now. And I think, please, let this not be a situation where the Cardinals say, all right, it's not going to work out here. And maybe the old change of scenery thing works for him somewhere else and he does figure it out.
Yeah.
And you start to think, why didn't he do that here? Why didn't you figure it out while you were here? Maybe sometimes getting shipped off to another team is the kick in the butt.
It's a wake up call.
It could be. And I don't know if that's even what he needs.
It's hard to tell, because there are two things that are problems with Jordan Walker. One of them was the team. Changing messages, they kind of let him just be a hitter at first, and then as he got close to the big leagues, they're like, buddy, now we got to change something. Should have made those changes when he was 18.
Right.
Should have started that when he was an A-ball, rather than letting him get comfortable. You should have started those changes right away. So you have that comments, that side of it, where the team didn't do a good enough job in his development and starting early enough with these adaptations that needed to be made. But then you have the other side of it, which is the player side. And does he buy into change? Does he accept when somebody suggests it?
When we talked to Brant Brown several months ago, that was one of those conversations on this show that kind of made its way back to some people, and they were not happy.
Yeah, but I mean, it was him and Ollie, and they were both telling the truth.
Yeah.
The player needs to be able to do it.
That's right.
We see some encouragement this offseason. Went to Driveline on his own, did some things, so we'll see if it holds.
Hopefully. When we come back, we're going to talk a little. One thing we do know for sure, I think, is that the Billikens are very good at basketball. The men's team, 23-1. They moved up a spot in the AP poll. We're going to talk to Bob Ramsey, the St. Louis Sports Hall of Famer. He is also the voice of the Billikens. He's next on the Gas House Gang. I feel like we say the exact same thing every Monday about the Billikens. Well, they keep doing it. They keep doing it. It's pretty incredible. Billikens are now 23-1. They have moved up a spot in the Associated Press poll, so they go from 19 to 18. They are 15 in the net ranking, so it just continues to be pretty darn good for this Billikens basketball team. And every Monday at 12:30, we talk to Bob Ramsey, who is the voice of the Billikens here on 104.1 FM KMOX. Good afternoon, Rammer. How we doing?
Grinds and wheels. How are my guys? How we doing today?
Doing good, Hall of Famer. Congratulations.
That's right.
Thanks, fellas. I really appreciate it. Means a lot. It was really very humbling, but my wife was on two really good St. Louis U volleyball teams. They were back-to-back conference champions. Her team went into the SLU Hall of Fame Friday night.
Oh, cool.
So I've learned now that I can't talk about my stuff. Hers is now the most recent. And so, and as you guys know, hey, whatever makes her happy is what we do.
Well, hey, congratulate her for us, though. That's really cool, man. You got Hall of Fames in the same week.
Yeah, really, really strange and really fun. And seeing her and her old teammates. Yeah, our buddy Bill McDermott normally does the MC for the Billiken Hall of Fame thing. He had the flu, so I filled in for that. So that made it kind of special.
That's
to,
cool.
You know, welcome them into the Billiken Hall of Fame. So it was a fun week, absolutely.
So what do we say about this Billikens team at this point?
Well, you know, I think it was real interesting that, let me back up a little bit. LaSalle had a really good game plan, establishing their identity as maybe not the most talent, but tough guys that are going to play very physical and be ready to play and give you their best every night. That's kind of their identity with a new coach as they move forward. And they did that and made the first half plus really almost two-thirds of the game really kind of they had the pace where they wanted it. And while in doing so, they kind of beat up the Billikens. It was a very physical game. And so Coach Schertz post-game, and I'm sure we'll talk about it tonight on KMOX at 6 o'clock for the Billiken Coaches Show, but talked about he realized he was going to have to change his game plan on training and preparation this week. Luckily, they don't have a midweek game and don't play again until Friday, but going to give the guys really two full days off before they start getting back into regular practice. So what we say is, while things are going really great, it doesn't take much to burst a balloon. And so paying attention to health, and being physically able and prepared to play is still an important part of the equation, along with defending and rebounding and making jump shots and all those kind of things.
And so the whatever illness was going on in the locker room, a couple of guys had gotten sick, that's all good to go, right?
I think they've been healthy for about a week now, relative to the flu bug or whatever was going around in there that for the last couple of games, they have been healthy, yes.
Yeah, that's one of those things that can hang around. You think everybody's good and it pops up somewhere else. This guy's got it, and then another guy gets it, and it can really cause problems for a couple of weeks. So it's good that they're all healthy and good to go. As you mentioned, they'll play again Friday, 7:30 game. We got the broadcast here at 7:15. They will play at Loyola. This is a good little road trip for them. You know, they've played very well at home. They've played really well on the road, too. But to go on the road these two games, this is kind of a big one for them over the next several days.
Yeah, it really is. And in fact, if you're one of those nervous Nellies, like I would have to admit maybe I I usually am, you're looking for where things can be tripped up. Now, Loyola's had a terrible year, terrible by any account. They've had injuries. They've got a core nucleus of a team that's been really good the last couple of years. And so because of that, they've stepped up on occasion. That they've got a couple of good wins, but by all accounts, this is a bad season for them. But they're playing at home. It'll be really interesting. Then, no matter what happens Friday, you've only got a couple of days, and you got to go to Rhode Island, who's kind of in the middle of the pack in the league. But, you know, Archie Miller is a terrific coach. They're on, in my belief, they're on the upswing as much for the season as for the next couple of years of being well coached. So these back-to-back road games, not to mention what you've got, you know, coming home after that with, you know, VCU. And this is kind of a gauntlet, and you'd like to think that you could have an easy go of it at Loyola, but we all know that that's maybe not a probability.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, Rammer, because look, I won't be the guy that says they can look past anybody. Nobody can in the A-10, and especially not when you get to the conference tournament, because that's where you really control your own destiny. You win the conference tournament, you got nothing to worry about. There's no measurements. Although, Ronch pointed this out earlier, the analytics numbers are great. So even with a loss or two, your case is strong. The team is really good. But, you know, you got the VCU and George Mason games that are going to get the most attention because they're the other top teams. But it feels like we're just waiting for the A-10 tournament to see how that sorts.
I wish it were that way. And I think that you point out in a reasonable fashion. But I just see these speed bumps along the way. And so, you know, and then Coach Schertz, and I'll bring that up and how he fights that. Because we can do that as media.
It's a good question, yeah.
But the minute a team starts to look too far ahead, you know something is good, not good, coming around the bend.
No, that's totally true. Not going to harm them if say, I do that.
Yeah, right.
but if Robbie Avila starts doing that, maybe.
Yeah.
Who's going to get the other seedings, and do they match up on Saturday?
Right.
And all that kind of stuff. We can have a lot of fun with that. And so, and you know, we can't be naive, especially in these days of all the social media, to think the players don't know what people are saying and don't know what's going on around them. So how do you guard against that?
Great
question. Thank you. That is going to be a question for tonight on the coaches' show.
A Billikens Report is brought to you by Royal Banks of Missouri. We talk to Bob Ramsey every Monday at 12:30. And Rammer, another thing that's happened is this team has drawn some really great crowds. And I was fortunate enough to get to go to the Dayton game and saw that crowd last time out. I mean, people, the building is selling out and people are starting to notice. You would hope that they would have started before, you know, we get 23, 24 games in, but this team is playing well enough that, you know, the general public knows what's going on now.
Yeah, and we are in the show me state, so I get that, but I'm like you. I wish there's always room on the bandwagon, but the bandwagon got going quite a bit earlier. And so it had been nice to have people jump on, but we're glad they're here. You know what was really great about the other day? LaSalle, obviously not a marquee. Not a marquee challenge. And they come in, and our buddy Guy Phillips does the PA announcing. And every day, or every game, and he's been doing it for years and years, please, you know, get on your feet, and as we do the starting lineup for your Billikens, or whatever he says. But part of it is, get up on your feet. And quite often, really a lot of fans, again, the show me, you got to show me stuff, kind of sit down, arms folded, waiting for the game to start. But against LaSalle, as soon as he said it, 10,000 people on their feet screaming. And you think, this is what college basketball is supposed to be at its best. And it was really cool to be around that atmosphere. It was really fun.
So, aside from the complacency possibility, or at least maybe the looking ahead possibility.
Yeah.
What's the biggest concern for the guys? Because we see a very deep, well-balanced roster. You've got guys who can score up and down, but they're more than that because they've clearly shown a commitment to playing defense the way that coach wants them to and all that. What's the concern? Is it just health?
Health is number one. But having said that, you're deep enough that you can, at least for a period of time, whether it's a game, a week, or a month, overcome an injury. And God forbid there's a serious injury. But you're deep enough, I think you can do that. I think I start looking at numbers and maybe too much. And look at the LaSalle game. Teams like, you know, and they were undermanned and they knew it. They knew what they had to do. But you look at a team like VCU, St. Joe's, who is playing a lot better, maybe Rhode Island, you get a game where the opposition is hammering the boards, in particular offensive rebounding, and LaSalle they won that battle, but they weren't able to take advantage of it on the scoreboard. Some better teams could do that. So if you're looking for something, you're really trying to discover something that could bite them in the rear, I think it might be rebounding and giving up offensive rebounds.
Rammer, I know that you have, and we've been doing this for weeks talking about this team, and you've said multiple times how athletic this particular group is, and they have maybe been more athletic than any other team we've seen. We've also seen how well they are shooting from long range, or how well they do shooting from long range, and it's been pretty remarkable, nearly record-breaking. You know, we're talking about a potentially historic Billikens team. I know in the past, when you talk about college basketball, that three-pointer is a bit of a... It was always called the equalizer against the... You know, if you're really good at doing that up against the big boys, you know, the guys who could play really well down low, if you're a mid-major team, you can sort of, you know, eliminate that a bit if you can shoot well from three, but a lot of teams are able to do that. So is it as big of an advantage or an equalizer as it used to be?
Well, for the Billikens in particular, it is because of the defense. So if you're shooting 45% and you're holding the opposition to 30%, there's the advantage. But if you are able to shoot it in volume, there's a little bit of a theory out there that volume and makes are more important than the actual percentage. So I try to keep a track on that as well. But what the Bills are doing is unprecedented in their program history. And that is, you know, I am loath to put anybody over those great spoonball teams with Claggett, Highmark, and Waldman shooting threes at a high percentage. But here is a team that has more guys shooting at a higher percentage from a deeper distance. It's really not arguable anymore. This is the best three-point shooting team, as long as being the most athletic team, along with being the most athletic team, or deep team, I should say. And so those three things have eclipsed anything we've seen before. And when you start to put historical context on it, it's sort of head-spinning.
Hell of a lot of fun to watch. They are ranked now number 18 in the country. They are off again until Friday. They'll be on the road. They'll play Loyola. The tip is at 7:30. We are going to have the broadcast starting at 7:15. Bob Ramsey, St. Louis Sports Hall of Famer, will have the call of that. Rammer, we appreciate you as always. And as we hit the break, tell everybody about our friends at Royal Banks.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
That Billikens Coaches Show with Bob Ramsey tonight at 6 o'clock. You'll want to listen into that. Before that, though,
he's going to ask my question.
Which question?
The one about getting distracted by all the noise.
Oh, yeah.
Makes me happy. The Hall of Famer is going to use my question.
What if he forgets?
He won't forget.
What if he was just humoring you?
Well, then I wouldn't blame him.
But Kevin Wheeler, you know what you can do? Hopefully, he'll be listening to Rush Hour Sports at 5. And you say, hey, Rammer, don't forget. You better ask my question.
Okay. I'll text him.
Yeah, or you can go ahead and text. Oh, I have Bob Ramsey's number. It's a real brag on your part, Kevin.
I'll just go knock on his front door.
Kevin Wheeler, Chris Ronji, a few more moments to go here on the Gas House Gang. I want to say this one thing real quick. This was a thing that struck me over the weekend. Maybe I didn't maybe I should have known this was going on, but I did not. So the Missouri Valley Football Conference, based here in St. Louis, you've heard of North Dakota State,
mm-hmm.
have you not? One of the
powerhouse
prolific programs in college football. It's FCS, so yep. it's not like yep. the main division. Well, that's not the case any longer.
Moving
they are
on
now
up.
Jumping up. They are jumping up to the next level. North Dakota State joining the Mountain West Football Conference. The Missouri Valley today officially welcoming or, you know, wishing them the best of luck in yeah. moving on. Here's the thing, Kevin. North Dakota State, going back the last 15 years, do you know how many times they won the national championship in football?
Yeah, it's like 8, right?
10.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So 10 of the last 15 years.
Yeah.
North Dakota State won it all.
I think they are playing a little above, a little below their level.
I mean, what at that point, there's nothing else.
At that point,
to,
you should make the jump.
Yeah, you kind of yeah. have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, when it's that easy, why not?
Missouri State has already, they made the jump this year.
Yeah.
Up to FBS, you know, joining the Conference
move,
USA.
Man. I mean, you get better on those TV deals, right? When you're doing those things, your TV deals are better. You're going to make more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But the competition steps up. I think that's less of a concern for North Dakota State because they've been above their competition forever anyway.
It doesn't matter who's coaching them.
No. Well, they've hired good coaches.
They have hired very good coaches, but each one of those coaches, there have been like five, I think, since 2011, and all of them really good.
Yep.
So they've done a really great job here. Meanwhile, I think in college basketball... Kevin, are you paying attention to the college sports these days?
Never. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yes. College hoops.
College basketball. We're going back to SLU for just a moment. I haven't gotten your thoughts on this, but there has been a push from a couple of senators, Eric Schmidt here in Missouri and Husted in Ohio, and they had sent a letter to the Big East a couple of weeks ago about getting Dayton and SLU into that conference at some point. And I know a letter from a senator is not the thing that's going to make that happen. But as long as we're talking about making a jump to a new conference, I was in Chicago when DePaul jumped to the Big East.
Yeah.
They've not done particularly well there.
No.
However, the difference is DePaul's program, which in a lot of ways, the universities are very similar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, set in a city, about the same enrollment, I think. They're both
pretty close, I think.
But the college basketball program here in St. Louis has been, for the last 15 years, far better than what they've done.
Oh, yeah, yeah. DePaul at times has been awful.
Could they hang in the Big East?
Yeah, I think it's really hard when you're taking a step up, that big of a step up, because the Big East has always been, and it's maybe not the way that it was in the 80s and 90s, where it was like the preeminent college basketball conference out there back in, you know, when Georgetown, Syracuse, those teams were just monsters. St. John's was a monster back then. I don't think it's there, but it's still one of the top two or three college basketball conferences. So could you hang? Sure. How easy is it going to be, though, for a school with your profile compared? Now, the Big East is not loaded up with big like 40,000-50,000 student body type state schools, right?
Right.
It's a lot of smaller schools and private schools and things. So I think you align fairly closely, but it would be a step up. Although with this roster, you could do it. you got to keep this kind of roster around on a year-by-year basis.
And not only that, but you got to find a way to keep Josh Schertz around for as long as possible.
Well, but moving up would be a way to do it.
Right.
If you can get to the Big East, that takes away some of the incentive to listen to an offer from a Big East team or a Big Ten team. Because now because when the program goes up, if you go to the Big East, your revenue is going to go up big, which will allow you to give more to a coach, more to a coaching staff, more NIL, things along those lines. So I guess with that little enhancement, wouldn't be crazy to say you could hang.
Rush Hour Sports at 5 o'clock today, Kevin.
Yes, sir.
Is it you alone or
no,
you?
No, actually, it's Bernie and Nate.
Oh, you're not in.
I'm not in today.
Oh, why didn't you?
I forgot
tell
that.
Me?
I just remembered it now. I forgot.
Dude.
I thought I was going to be in.
Where the hell are you going?
I don't know. I guess because they had me do this, they told me to go home early.
What a nice thing for you.
Yeah. How great is that?
Go enjoy your early evening tonight. You're back at it tomorrow, though. Rush Hour Sports at 5 o'clock. We will be back for the Gas House Gang tomorrow. Not Kevin, but it'll be Bernie Miklas and me. We'll talk sports with you. We hope that you come back then. If you missed anything on this show, Odyssey app or YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, @KMOX Sports, go find it there. and listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 12. That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Chris Ranji, the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and Overhead Door Company of St. Louis.